Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 656, titled The Obama File, Part 3, Bad Jacketing Obama, Part 2. This program is being recorded on Pearl Harbor Day, December 7th of the year 2008. This broadcast follows directly on the heels of For the Record program number 655, which in turn derives in part from For the Record 654. That's, I guess, as good a way as any of pointing out how these broadcasts are not only intimately and sequentially linked up to a point, but also each broadcast has turned into an article-length description on the SpitfireList.com website. I cannot stress strongly enough to people not only the gravity of the current situation, hopefully what you're seeing in the news is doing that, but it is absolutely paramount. It is literally, even if you don't grasp this, and I'm sorry if that seems patronizing, but it is absolutely essential to your survival and the survival of the planet and the species to address the problems that are overtaking the world. And the fact of the matter is this. The SpitfireList.com website, SpitfireList.com, is the best source for anti-fascist information that there is, period. It is the mother load, so to speak. I'd use other language, but that the FCC frowns on such things. But it is the best. As one person put it, it is the Shangri-La of anti-fascist research and is being added to and becoming better with time. So please, SpitfireList.com. If you don't lose it, you're going to lose it, people, and believe me, the phrase that I've used so many times, read or bleed, learn or burn, applies now more than ever. Now, to the subject of the broadcast, we are going to be taking a look at an incident that took place during the campaign, which illustrates the cooperation between an underground Reich slash Republican Party slash Muslim Brotherhood Fifth Column collaboration in the United States, which in turn works in conjunction with, I suspect, overtly conspiratorially to an extent, and simply from the standpoint of resonance past that. But it works with the Muslim Brotherhood Islamic fascists abroad. As I say so often, I do not want to be misunderstood as characterizing Islam as fascist, but the Muslim Brotherhood is an Islamic fascist organization dating to the late 20s. It fought with the Axis in World War II. During the Cold War, it jumped to Western intelligence, first British intelligence, then the CIA. It is the parent organization of first the Afghan Mujahideen, later Al-Qaeda, Hamas, and Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and very sadly, it has been able to successfully present many of its front organizations in America as democratic, peaceful, moderate institutions. In no small part, that success owes to the fact that the Muslim Brotherhood is directly connected to the Republican Party. It is directly connected to the Republican Party's ethnic outreach organization, a repository for fascists from World War II and the institutions that they represent. And because of the links between the Republican Party, the Bush administration, Karl Rove, Grover Norquist, and the Muslim Brotherhood, they have in part been able to successfully represent themselves as moderates. And what we're going to be taking a look at in this broadcast is collaboration between the Muslim Brotherhood in the United States and some of its front organizations and the Republican Party to badjacket Barack Obama, to tar him with the onus of being a Muslim, which the GOP and the right wing were trying to do. And in turn, if he went too far to try to escape that tarring effort, it would alienate him from the Muslim voters in the United States. We're going to begin by taking a look at a short article from, or part of an article from a counterterrorism blog. This is by Andrew Cochran, and it reads in part, it's called The Muslim Brotherhood. What do they really want to teach American Muslim youth? And it reads in part, certain journalists from respected media outlets, most recently Mary Beth Sheridan of the Washington Post, continue to display a certain naivete in reporting stories on extremist organizations who falsely profess to be mainstream moderates. Merely parroting their words without examination creates articles that are void of fact and nuance. Perhaps it is well-intentioned, as it is very appealing to take organizations such as the Muslim Public Affairs Committee and the Muslim American Society at their word. We want to believe that there are authoritative organizations out there to deflect and ultimately defeat radicalism. However, in an August 8th article titled, Educating Against Extremism, Muslims Reach Out to Youths Who Could Be Susceptible to Radicalism, Sheridan neglected to mention that the Muslim American Society is intimately and publicly connected to the Muslim Brotherhood, a secret society dedicated to the establishment of Islamic rule, who recently issued a public appeal for support of the forces fighting the coalition in Iraq. Unfortunately, Sheridan's omissions are part of a larger problem of journalists who have wittingly or unwittingly become de facto public relations representatives for extremist Islamist groups. Taking their press releases at face value, journalists have helped effectively to cover up the larger, serious issue of the growing secret network of the Muslim Brotherhood in the U.S. Tom Lahr Tesler, Assistant Director for Special Projects at the Investigative Project, has written the following response to the Washington Post article. And we don't need to read the entire response, but the point is that the Muslim Brotherhood, a fascist organization, has and the parent organization of the most heinous Islamist terrorists around the world, including Lashkar-e-Taiba, which appears to have perpetrated the Mumbai atrocity. More about that in 657. But it has successfully been able to represent itself as a moderate organization. Indeed, much as the GOP, the Republican Party of the United States, continues to represent itself as a conservative organization, as I think now perhaps even real conservatives, a vanishing and endangered species in this country, must be forced to acknowledge. The Republican Party ain't no conservative organization, folks. What you're looking at now is the result of the antithesis of conservatism. And as you watch the society collapse, and I suspect ultimately collapse in flames around you, understand what is taking place. But it is necessary, as I explained, and for the records, 654, and particularly 655, with Barack Obama, even if you don't like him, he's the president, and we are in serious trouble. And if his administration doesn't succeed, we're doomed. We are doomed. And the fact of the matter is that it's necessary to anticipate the avenues of attack against Barack Obama, and I think that is something that we're going to necessarily have to engage in. So let's take a look at what took place during the campaign. Now, there was a very, very widely publicized incident, and bearing in mind, for the record, 655, in which there are indications that Karl Rove and elements around the Bush administration and the GOP may have been engaging in deep badjacketing, that they may have been setting Barack Obama up from the get-go for this type of discreditation. We're going to take a look at an incident in Michigan in which a couple of Muslim women were on stage on a televised appearance by Barack Obama. They were wearing headscarves, and when they were asked to please remove themselves from the picture, because that would play into the Obama's a secret Muslim imbroglio, it created a public relations disaster. And what we're going to look at here is the pivotal role of elements associated with the Muslim Students Association in generating that incident. The Muslim Students Association is a Muslim Brotherhood front organization in the United States, as we will look at, and it is directly connected to the Bank al-Taqwa. We're going to begin by taking a look at a Chicago Tribune article by Katie Fretland of the Tribune. This is from June 19th of 2008. It's titled, Obama Apologizes to Muslims, Ket from Rally. It reads in part as follows. Senator Barack Obama has personally apologized to two Muslim women who were kept from sitting behind the podium during his rally in Detroit this week because they wore headscarves. Heba Aref and Shima Abdul Fadil said in a joint email statement Thursday that they are grateful and ready to move forward after each received calls from the senator. In his own statement, Obama said he expressed his deepest apologies to the women Thursday. The actions of these volunteers were unacceptable and in no way reflect any policy of my campaign, he said. I take deepest offense to and will continue to fight against discrimination against people of any religious group or background, unquote. On Monday, the women attended a rally in Detroit where volunteers separately said they could not sit in the area behind the stage because they were wearing hijabs. The special seating area is visible during video and photographs of the event. Quote, This incident was unfortunate and extremely disappointing, the women wrote. Senator Obama has called us each to personally convey his deepest apologies and acknowledge that this was inexcusable. We both immensely appreciate the senator's phone call and his commitment to remedy this issue. On Monday, a ref, a 25-year-old lawyer, arrived early and waited hours for the speech to begin. And so they take note here, again, the embarrassment this caused the Obama campaign. It tended to alienate Muslims from the Obama campaign. I think to an extent Barack Obama was in a double bind. He was going to be damned if he did and damned if he don't. But before we take a look at some of the people involved here, including Ms. Aref, let's take a look at how the Republican media, Republican-connected media, were playing this. From Philly.com, the website of the Philadelphia Daily News, Michael Smirkanish has a column, Obama slips starting to show, and an indication of his political sentiments is in the opening paragraphs. Doctors and campaign advance men Sharon and Violet rule, do no harm. It's a mantra I learned 25 years ago when I began doing advance work for George H.W. Bush, which entailed working with the Secret Service to scout out the vice president's appearances and produce a minute-by-minute itinerary. At first, I was assigned to the less glamorous destinations, such as Butler, Pennsylvania. Later, some of the assignments were plums, Brussels, skipping down about the headscarves incident. In other words, misinformation is being spread that Obama is a Muslim who was sworn into office with his hand on a Quran, and presumably the volunteers thought they'd be fueling internet rumors about the candidate's religion if they allowed the women to sit right behind him. That misinformation has found an audience abroad enough to warrant concern. Polling by the Pew Research Center indicates that 1 in 10 registered voters believes Obama is secretly a Muslim, and that 10% continues to flummox his campaign. Even the vehicle the campaign rolled out this month to fight what it considers untrue charges has stirred commotion. Some Muslims wonder why the campaign considers being called a Muslim a smear, unquote. Representative Keith Ellison, an actual Muslim, says fellow Muslims haven't been fully engaged, unquote, in Obama's message of inclusion, and says he was recently asked not to speak in a mosque on Obama's behalf. Obviously, the campaign volunteers erred when they denied the women their promised seats. They violated the first rule of advance. They did harm, and it was both predictable and avoidable. And more about Ms. Aref's reaction to this. She accepted Barack Obama's apology. This, by the way, from an article from Politico website. It's by Ben Smith, June 18th of 2008. Muslims barred from picture at Obama event. And skipping down, we read, Aref said she was glad Obama had apologized, but she was not entirely satisfied. Quote, I think this is a much bigger deal than maybe they're perceiving it as, she said, noting that Obama had placed a personal call to a television reporter he dismissively called sweetie, unquote. Quote, an apology from him personally would be better, she said, then reconsidered. If they are true to their word, I think it would suffice to have an invitation to their next rally and have seats behind him and show up on TV. So notice what she's suggesting. And again, I think that Barack Obama was in something of a double bind here, and I suspect that double bind was absolutely intentional. And I'm going into this to anticipate if in the event we have another major terrorist incident in this country, or even if the Muslim Brotherhood connected incidents continue to accelerate abroad, and we're going to go into the Mumbai incident in, for the record, 657, attacking Barack Obama as a secret Muslim or a secret Muslim sympathizer, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, is something that in the event, say, an American city goes up from a nuke or there's another horrible style attack along the lines of September 11th, it could have some very, very serious fallout indeed, particularly given the fact that America is so dumbed down at this point that the average American can't tell a dirt road from a chicken with lips, in my opinion. I think we're particularly vulnerable to this type of propaganda. Let us, however, take a look now at a website that is from the Muslim Students Association of the University of Michigan at Dearborn. And as we take a look at this website, one of the people that we see on the website as one of the officials, one of the functionaries of the Muslim Student Association branch at the University of Michigan at Dearborn is none other than Heba Aref, the woman who we saw in this particular incident. This is the woman who was so vocal, a 25-year-old lawyer. She was in this period, 2003 to 2006, that's covered on this website, a member of the executive board. And in particular, she is in charge of Dawah, which is Muslim outreach / proselytization. And again, she is one of the executives of the Muslim Brotherhood, was one of the executives of the Muslim Brotherhood front organization, the Muslim Student Association. And by way of fleshing out that connection, we're going to take a look at a short article from the Washington Post of September 11th, 2004. And this talks about the State Department looking to work with the Muslim Brotherhood. This, again, is from the Washington Post of September 11th, 04. It's by John Mintz and Douglas Farah. Its headline, In Search of Friends Among the Foes, U.S. Hopes to Work with Diverse Group. That diverse group is the Muslim Brotherhood. Now, Qaradawi here is Yousef Qaradawi. He is a mullah. He is one of the most respected Islamist philosophers, or Islamic philosophers. He also is an Islamist as well. He is the advisor, the spiritual unquote advisor to the Bank al-Taqwa, headed up by Yousef Nada, a Nazi spy in World War II, and the Bank al-Taqwa itself, to a large extent, a protege organization of the late François Janoux. Janoux was the heir to the political last will and testament and collected literary works of Adolf Hitler, Martin Bormann, and Joseph Goebbels. And in his speech here, Qaradawi talks about, and Yousef Qaradawi, again, the spiritual advisor to the Bank al-Taqwa and a member of the Muslim Brotherhood. In his speech, Qaradawi here is talking about Dawah, and the aforementioned Heba Aref was in charge of Dawah for the Muslim Student Association branch at the University of Michigan at Dearborn. Skipping down in the Douglas Farah article, in his speech, Qaradawi said the Dawah would work through Islamic groups set up by the Brotherhood supporters in this country, meaning America. He praised supporters who were jailed by Arab governments in 1950s and then came to the United States to, quote, fight the seculars and the westernized, unquote, by founding this country's leading Islamic groups. One more time for emphasis. He praised supporters who were jailed by Arab governments in the 1950s and then came to the United States, quote, to fight the seculars and the westernized, unquote, by founding this country's leading Islamic groups. He named the Muslim Students Association, which was founded in 1963. 20 years later, the Muslim Student Association, using $21 million raised in part from Qaradawi, banker Yousef Nada, and, by the way, again, Yousef Nada was a Nazi spy in World War II. Beginning again, he named the Muslim Students Association, which was founded in 1963. 20 years later, the MSA, using $21 million raised in part from Qaradawi, banker Yousef Nada, and the Emir of Qatar, opened a headquarters complex built on former farmland in suburban Indianapolis. With 150 chapters, the Muslim Student Association is one of the nation's largest college groups. The MSA website said the group's essential task, quote, was always Dawah, unquote. Nowadays, Muslim activists say its members represent all schools of Islam and political leanings. Many are moderates, while others express anti-U.S. views or support violence against Israelis. Some of the same Brotherhood people who started the Muslim Students Association also launched the North American Islamic Trust in 1971. The trust is a financing arm that holds titles to hundreds of U.S. mosques and manages bank accounts for Muslim groups using Islamic principles. And again, bear in mind that the woman who was at the center of the headscarf imbroglio, Heba Aref, was in charge of Dawah and one of the executives of the Muslim Student Association at the University of Michigan at Dearborn. And in this particular time, and as noted in that article, there are diverse people within the Muslim Student Association, or people of diverse views. Yet, I think it's important to understand what was taking place at the University of Michigan at Dearborn in connection with the MSA branch that Ms. Aref, of which she was an executive. This is a website that focuses on, among other things, global religion, and the full URL will be in the description for the program, again on the vitally important SpitfireList.com website. The Future of the Faith is the title of the article. It's by Jean-Eve Abido, Jean-Eve Abdo, And this is from Friday, June 13th of 2008. And there's an introduction of the article. In universities across the United States, young leaders are emerging to represent the new face of Islam. In Mecca and Main Street, unquote, Genev Abdo examines the raging and sometimes violent debate between moderate and conservative young Muslims. Farhan Latif always knew it was only a matter of time before the slow-burning anger would erupt. His conservative Muslim enemies had made their intentions clear to him. They had sent threatening emails and left menacing messages on his cell phone. In their eyes, Farhan's ideas were criminal. The Western world might call him a moderate Muslim, but his foes thought he was an apostate luring young Muslims away from the faith. The day Farhan feared came in September 2004. As he was about to enter his modern apartment in Dearborn, about 1 mile from his university, again, parenthetically, that's the University of Michigan at Dearborn, three young men jumped him and pushed him to the ground. They beat him and kicked him without saying a word. Farhan recognized one of his attackers. The guy didn't bother to hide his face under a mask. "Why are you doing this?" Farhan cried, trying to shield his face from their blows. The attackers did not reply. Within minutes, they got back into their car and tried to run Farhan over before they sped away. He managed to avoid the oncoming wheels by rolling away just in time. As he rested in the hospital, nursing a swollen head, several cracked ribs, and a broken arm, Farhan was depressed more than shocked over the beating. It was one thing to endure the daily blows from the non-Muslims who criticized Islam, but now he was in a battle with his fellow believers. "I fight against everything people say against my religion every day, on television, on the radio, everywhere," Farhan remarked, reflecting on the incident later. "I was not so much scared when this happened, but sad that fellow Muslims would do this," unquote. Months before the attack, in the spring of 2004, Farhan was elected president of the Muslim Students Association at the University of Michigan's Dearborn campus. In a short time, he revolutionized the association, making it more attractive to a majority of Muslim students on campus, many of whom had refused to join when the conservatives were in charge. And those were some of the people who were in charge during this period. So again, it's something of an insight into some of the conflicts and dynamics that were taking place on the University of Michigan at Dearborn, within the Muslim Students Association branch at the University of Michigan at Dearborn. And you could give some insight into some of the people who were, it gives us an insight into the mentality that was loose within the organization, not unopposed to, obviously, at the time that Heba Aref was in charge of Dawah. And again, bearing in mind the Muslim Student Association's direct connections to the Bank al-Taqwa, that shouldn't come as too much of a surprise. And it also shouldn't come as too much of a surprise to learn that elements within the Muslim Student Association, elements who were helping to promote this incident. And again, it placed Barack Obama in a double bind. If he allows, and I don't really fault his volunteers past a point, they probably figured, well, what do we do? And they made a decision. I don't think there was a winning decision to be made in this circumstance, because either it plays into the hands of the know-nothings who are claiming Obama's a secret Muslim, or it winds up alienating the Muslim population as well. I suspect that just such a deep badjacketing scenario is one of the things that Karl Rove and company intended. One of the things to look at in connection with this, and the URLs for all of these various points of information will be in the description for the Record 656. Again, spitfirelist.com. Please use the website. The fellow, or one of the people who was associated with Heba Aref and who helped to escort them to this particular incident, was a fellow named Brandon Edward Miller. And in the Politico article from which I read earlier, again, it's called Muslims Barred from Picture at Obama Event. It's by Ben Smith, June 18, 2008. We find the following, skipping down again. That incident began when the volunteer asked Aref's friend Ali Kusan and two others, Aref's brother Sharif, and another young lawyer, Brandon Edward Miller, whether they would like to sit behind the stage. The three young men said they would, but mentioned that they were with friends. The man said that the volunteer, a 20-something African-American woman in a green shirt, asked if their friends looked and were dressed like the young men who were all light-skinned and wearing suits. Miller said yes, but mentioned that one of their friends was wearing a headscarf with their suit. And then the article goes on. The volunteer explained to me that because of the political climate and what's going on in the world and what's going on with Muslim Americans, it's not good for a ref to be seen on TV or associated with Obama, said Kusan, a law student at Wayne State University. Both Kusan and Miller said they specifically recalled the volunteer citing the political climate and telling they couldn't sit behind Obama. Well, who is Brandon Edward Miller? Well, an article from the Harvard Law Review, basically from Harvard Law, says that Brandon Edward Miller was working on the UN's Oil for Food investigation and working with a private intelligence outfit called Diligence Source Watch. Diligence is an outfit that has very strong ties to New Bridge Strategies. New Bridge Strategies is the outfit put together by, among others, Haley Barbour, the Republican governor of Mississippi. New Bridge Strategies, among other things, has subcontracted with some Bank Altaqua subsidiaries in Iraq, specifically Albunia Industries, and that is available, the documentation for that, in the archives. One doesn't want to make too much of any one of these connections. I don't want to stress that. Yet, it is more than a little interesting to find that somebody basically involved with a private intelligence outfit linked to not only the Republican Party, but to that Republican element that's willing to work with the Muslim Brotherhood. And again, Haley Barbour's outfits have been subcontracting with Altaqua subsidiaries in Iraq. It's more than a little interesting to see Brandon Edward Miller, someone part of that same milieu that linked to this particular incident. I also want to note that Sharif Aref, the brother of Heba Aref, also appears to be involved with the Muslim Student Association. And again, I'll list the URLs for these various points of information. There is a Muslim Student Association Dearborn Political Task Force with which Sharif Aref is affiliated. And also, he set up another organization, a new student group in 2006. It's been featuring speakers from the Council on American-Islamic Relations. Yet another one of these organizations, which sadly is represented as moderate, but which is not moderate at all, and which has very strong links to the Muslim Brotherhood. I should perhaps stress yet again that when I talk about fascism within the Islamic community, and when I talk about the very regrettable co-option or co-opting of the dialogue vis-a-vis Islam here in the United States by extremist organizations, this should not be misunderstood as being anti-Muslim, and one cannot but feel sympathy. I cannot but feel sympathy for people like Mr. Farhan, who was brave enough and had the integrity to challenge this extremism at the Muslim Student Association branch in Dearborn, Michigan, one of whose executives and the executive in charge of Dawah, as Qaradawi put it, was Heba Aref. And again, I think that it is important for us to look at the collaboration between elements of the Republican Party, which in many ways is just a front for the underground Reich, and the Muslim Brotherhood's outfits abroad, because the Muslim Brotherhood's outfits in the U.S., because the Muslim Brotherhood's outfits abroad appear to be ramping up once again. Again, spitfirelist.com, that's the website. Use it, please. It's the best source for anti-fascist information in the world. Nothing like it, nothing close. This concludes For the Record program number 656. The Obama File Part 3, Badjacketing Obama Part 2. This is being recorded on December 7th of 2008. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.